Hangar A.
"I've never been here before," she said over the rush of the wind.
"I know.
It looks very quiet.
Sunday. Day of rest for most of the company."
"I see."
Glancing at her as they neared the hangar, Dan said, "You ought to come for a launch. Plenty of activity then."
"That's what I want to talk to you about," Jane said, looking very serious.
Dan led her into the cool shadows of the empty hangar and up the stairs to his office.
"No one's here?"
Jane asked as they went along the catwalk to his office. "Not a soul." Niles Muhammad was in Hangar B, Dan knew, getting his team ready to pick up the O2 plane when it arrived on the freighter at Galveston. But from inside his office, the complex looked almost totally deserted. "Just you and me, Jane. Practically alone on a tropical island." She took the chair in front of his desk.
"Semi-tropical at best," she said.
Dan perched on the edge of the desk in front of her. "That's what I need, a geography lesson."
"Dan, be serious, please."
He didn't feel serious. He felt like pulling her up from the chair and waltzing across the office with her in his arms. But he said, "Okay, what do you want to talk about?"
"There's a rumor floating around Washington that you believe your first space plane was sabotaged."
"So that's it," Dan thought. "Strictly business." "I'm positive it was," he said. "My chief engineer was murdered a few days afterward, and they made it look like an accident."
"What proof do you have?"
"None. Not a damned thing. But one of the reasons I flew the backup bird was to prove that there's nothing wrong with the space plane's design. She flies fine when nobody messes with her."
"That's pretty thin ice, Dan."
"I know. Nobody believes me. I can't even get the double-damned FBI to take it seriously."
"I see," Jane said.
Then she fell silent. Dan waited a few moments, wondering what to do next. At last he asked, "Is that all you came down here to talk about?"
"No, not really."
"What else?"
"You."
"Me."
"And Morgan?"
"Him again," Dan grumbled.
"Dan, he's the only man in America who can make this country energy independent."
"And rain makes applesauce."
"It's true."
Trying to keep his feelings under control, Dan said, "Jane, Scanwell may be the only candidate who wants to make America energy independent, but..."
"He needs your help."
"I am helping him. I'd appreciate a little help coming my way, too."
"We're working on that. I've introduced the bill in the Senate to help raise financing for you."
"Jane, I'm tightrope walking on a shoelace here." Despite herself, she giggled.
"You always did have a way with words, Dan."
And he grinned back at her. "One of my many talents." More seriously, Jane said,
"This test flight of yours has created a lot of enemies. NASA thinks..."
"I know. They think I'm a loose cannon."
"Worse, Dan. They think you're a threat to their program."
"That's fine by me."
"But they'll oppose you every inch of the way."
"So what? I don't need their help."
"You don't understand," she said. "Government regulatory agencies like the FAA are going to need expert advice about your plans to fly your space plane again. Who do you think they'll turn to?"
Dan knew the answer.
"And when you approach private investors for funding, who will they ask for an opinion?"
"The double-damned space agency," he growled.
"Exactly."
"Well, I don't have to worry about any of that if I let Tricontinental buy into my company, or Yamagata."
"We can't have that," she said sharply.
"We?" "You mean Scanwell?"
"Yes. Morgan can't point to you as part of his energy independence program if you're owned by a multinational oil company or a Japanese corporation."
"Scanwell won't be able to point to me at all if I don't get some funding damn soon. I'll be underwater."
"We're trying, Dan, but you've got to cooperate."
"I am cooperating. I'm pushing as hard as I can to get the power sat up and running."
"But you can't thumb your nose at the FAA the way you just did. You can't turn NASA into an enemy."
"Double damn it to hell and back," Dan exploded. "That test flight generated more publicity for the idea of energy independence than anything Scanwell's done. Hell and damnation, I'm even getting nibbles of interest from potential investors thanks to that flight."
"It's not the kind of publicity we need," Jane said. "It makes you look like a hero, I know, but it's creating more enemies than friends for you."
"You mean it's stealing the spotlight from Scanwell?"
"No, that's not what I mean."
"He's making speeches and I'm doing something. Maybe I ought to run for president."
Looking up at the ceiling as if seeking divine assistance, Jane said, "Dan, you simply don't understand the way politics works. You have to make friends, not enemies."
"I'm not a politician, Jane. I'm just a businessman trying to keep my company from going under."
"You can be a great help to Morgan if you'll just..."
"I don't want to help Scanwell or anybody else," he snapped. "All I want is to get that power sat operating."
"And the future of the country?"
"The country's future will be a lot brighter once we have a power satellite showing that we can bring in gobs of energy from space."
"Dan, if you'd only work with Morgan instead of running off on your own tangent..."
"What good would that do me?"
he asked.
Her head sank, and for a moment Dan thought she was crying. But then she looked up at him again, dry-eyed.
"We could get him elected president, Dan. He's a great man. He could be a great president."
Anger flared deep inside him, but Dan fought to keep it under control. "Look, I like Morgan Scanwell. I really do. He might make a pretty decent president if he can get himself elected. But that's his problem, not mine. I've got problems of my own, plenty of them."
"I know that, Dan. But can't you see that..."
"Jane, can't you see that you're the only person in the world I care about?"
Her breath caught in her throat. Then she shook her head slowly. "For what it's worth, Dan, I feel the same way about you."
He felt as if he'd been dropped out of an airplane.
"I wish I didn't," Jane went on, softly, almost as if talking to herself. "You're nothing but trouble for me. But I've never stopped loving you. Even when I was furious with you, I knew I loved you."
"I love you too, Jane," he heard himself say, his voice hollow with wonder. She rose to her feet, facing him eye to eye.
"What are we going to do about it?"
Dan wrapped her in his arms and kissed her. She melted into him, and it was as if all the years, the separation, the arguments, had disappeared. After a long, long, breathless time, he slipped his arm around her waist and guided her toward the office door. He saw the questioning look in her eyes. With a lame grin, he said, "Would you believe that my apartment is just down the catwalk?" She smiled back at him, her head nestled on his shoulder.
"Yes, knowing you, I'd believe it."
Dan felt very grateful for Tomasina. They made love languidly, as if they'd never been apart, as if there was nowhere else on earth that they had to be, no one else that concerned them. But at last, as late afternoon sunlight lanced through the apartment's window, Jane sat up in bed.
"I'm afraid I'll have to get back," she said.
"No," Dan whispered. "Stay with me."
"I wish I could, Dan."
He nodded reluctantly, knowing the moment was gone. "Okay. I'll phone the motel and tell them to start your pilot back to the airport." She gave him an impish look.
"Not yet."
"No?"
"Do you still like long showers?"
He took his hand away from the telephone and got to his feet. "I'll turn on the water," he said, patting toward the tiny bathroom. The shower is barely big enough for one, Dan thought. This is going to be fun. And it was. Slippery, naked bodies slathered with soap suds. Dan banged his elbows on the tiled shower walls more than once, cracked his knee hard enough to make him yowl with pain. But it didn't matter. Nothing mattered except that Jane was with him and they were together, and none of the rest of the world mattered at all. Until the water at last began to run cold. "It's just a small hot water tank," Dan apologized.
"It's time to go," Jane said, stepping out of the shower stall, reaching for a towel.
Dan patted her dry as slowly as he could, but at last she went back to the bedroom and began picking up the clothes they had strewn across the floor. Once he was dressed, Dan phoned the motel and told Jane's pilot they would meet him at the airstrip in half an hour. As they walked out into the humid warmth of the late afternoon, Dan asked, "What happens now, Jane?" With a moment's hesitation, she said,
"I've got to get back to Washington, and you've got to make your power satellite work."
"And Scanwell?"
As if she hadn't heard him, Jane said, "I'll get to the head of the FAA for you. I don't think I can get NASA on your side, but I can at least keep them from publicly criticizing you."
"And Scanwell?" he repeated. She opened the passenger side door of the Jaguar and got into the car. Dan walked around to the driver's side without taking his eyes off her.